dangerous now.
Here, volunteered at your own risk.
Is this on?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Shamini Kinamani Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nibhishesha Shunyavadi Pashtutate Shtayana. Maybe those who are chanting the holy name of Narayan won't have to be tied to the tree and all of that. You could get pretty close though. Okay. So we've encountered, or rather the Yamadutas have encountered the Vishnudutas. The Yamadutas had come to arrest Ajamil and drag him to the court of Yamaraj. Of course, all of this is being discussed by way of instruction on the importance of the holy name of the Lord. Sukadev Goswami has explained that there are different ways. What was the original question from Parikshit Maharaj? Yeah.
It was regarding atonement, how the living entity should atone for sins.
Not quite. What was the original question? Yeah?
How can someone be saved from hellish life?
Yeah, how does one get saved from hellish life? Then, the first recommendation was? Yeah, that's atonement. Try atonement. And what does Parikshit Maharaj say about that? Huh? Manye kundra shochabat. It seems just like the bathing of an elephant. You just get all clean and all dirty again. So that doesn't work. And what was the next proposal?
Knowledge.
But then, quickly, Sukadeva Goswami comes to the point that when one chants the holy name of the Lord, one can get freed from all sinful reactions. And especially Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Prayana. When there's pure devotional service to Krishna, then it dissipates all sinful activities as the sun dissipates fog. And now he's giving this history of Ajamil by way of illustration for this teaching. So Ajamil was a Brahmin boy, but he became degraded, and so the Yamadutas came to arrest him. Just when they were going to arrest him, the Vishnudutas showed up. Why did they show up? No, the Vishnu.
Oh, the Vishnudutas.
Did I say the Yamadutas? Probably I did. Okay. We know why the Yamadutas showed up, right? He was sinful. Why the Vishnudutas showed up? Because he was chanting the holy name of Narayan. Why was he chanting the holy name of Narayan? Calling for his pet son. Yeah. So now the Vishnudutas have stopped the Yamadutas, and the Yamadutas are going to get uptight, as we say. They're disturbed. I need a Yamaduta. Who wants to be a Yamaduta today? You only get a couple of lines. It's not very hard to be a Yamaduta. It's only a temporary job.
The servants of Yamaraj.
Yeah, servant, you get to serve a Mahajan.
I'll take the job.
Okay, you're a Yamaduta. And you're on page 48.
Which text?
Text 32. Just give the line, you know, with full force.
Who are you, sir, that have the audacity to challenge the jurisdiction of Yamaraj?
Who are you? Who do you guys think you are? Audaciously challenging the jurisdiction of Yamaraj, Dharmarajasya, king of Dharma. Huh? Then they say,
dear sirs, whose servants are you? Where have you come from? And why are you forbidding us to touch the body of Ajamil? Are you demigods from the heavenly planets? Are you sub-demigods? Or are you the best of devotees?
One thing, there's a tendency in ISKCON to say Ajamil, and it's Ajamil. Ajamil. Okay. So the Yamadutas knew something. They knew that there's these different classes of perfected beings, the devas, the upadevas, and so on. So, who are you guys? That's the question. On page 50, they speak again.
Your eyes are just like the petals of the lotus flowers, dressed in yellow silken garments, decorated with garlands of lotuses, and wearing very attractive helmets on your heads, and earrings on your ears. You all appear fresh and youthful. Your four long arms are decorated with bows and quivers of arrows, and with swords, clubs, conch shells, discs, and lotus flowers. Your effulgence has dissipated the darkness of this place with extraordinary illumination. Now, sirs, why are you obstructing us?
The Prabhupada gives a nice... I like how he opens his comment. He says, before even being introduced to a foreigner, one becomes acquainted with him through his dress, bodily features, and behavior, and can thus understand his position. So these were definitely foreigners, the Vishnudutas. But upon seeing them, just like we see people, we see, okay, there's a Russian devotee, there's a Chinese devotee, there's a this or that, or there's a somebody, or we see all sorts of different people. We get some idea where they're from, what kind of people they are. So here, these are pretty unusual people, lotus petal eyes and yellow garments and forearms and all these attractive bodily features, attractive gear that they're wearing. So they could understand that these are, just like you see sometimes, well, immediately you see what kind of people are. Like around here, you can see these kind of new crow teenager Bengali boys, the guys with the American style jeans that say something like "Hell's Angels" across the front, and they're kind of like, they don't have a cigarette in their hand, but they have an imaginary cigarette in their hand, and they're kind of tough young American kids, right? You see those guys hanging out around here a little bit. They come to see the samadhi or something, so. You know, just by, you could tell something about their subtle bodies also by seeing their get-up. So here we can understand that these are extraordinary people, these Vishnudutas. And so, in fact, they look just like Narayan. And so the Yamadutas want to know, sirs, who are you? And seeing this, the Vishnudutas smile, and they're smiling probably because they're thinking, what is this nonsense they're speaking? If they're actually servants of Yamaraj, they should know that Ajamil is not a suitable candidate for them to carry off. So the Vishnudutas are thinking, not quite so grossly, but who are these guys? We'd say, who are these jerks? Who are these guys? What are they? Who are these jokers? What do they think they're doing? So they're smiling. Who are these guys? But now we need a Vishnu Duta. Who's a good Vishnu? You have to have a voice rumbling like clouds, by the way. Who wants to be a Vishnu Duta here? You don't have a rumbling voice like clouds. Seem like you're not quite sure whether you want to be a Vishnu Duta or not over here. You want to be a Vishnu Duta? Okay, you're a Vishnu Duta. Your line is on page 38. Text 38, right, page 53.
If you are actually servants of Yamaraj, you must explain to us the meaning of religious principles and the symptoms of religion.
Yeah. A servant must know the instructions of his master. They claim to be carrying out the master's order, so the Vishnu Dutas ask them, okay, you're carrying out the orders of Dharmaraj, the enforcer of religious principles? All right, you tell us, what are the religious principles? Ready to go? And Prabhupada comments nicely. We were discussing yesterday why we need this knowledge, why we have to read the books. We can just worship the deities. Why do we have to read the books? And Prabhupada comments, one who represents someone else must fully know that person's mission. The devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement must therefore be fully aware of the mission of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. Otherwise, they will be considered foolish. All devotees, especially preachers, must know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness so as not to be embarrassed and insulted when they preach. Sometimes it's not just that we're all, you know, I don't think I need this or I'm not that interested, but we're supposed to be representing someone else, and if we can't do that well, that's not very good. It's like our Giriraj Swami, he's not very much inclined toward, he doesn't care about dress very much, or especially back in those days, Prabhupada's days, he just didn't, you know. So one time Prabhupada told me, you should just dress nicely just for me. I know you don't care, but the idea is that you're representing the firm, you're representing the spiritual master and the Krishna consciousness movement, so then you have to dress a little nicely to be respectable on that account. Otherwise, for ourselves, we may not care, but for this reason. So here's another reason why we have to read the books, so that we won't be considered foolish when we try to represent the spiritual master or the Hare Krishna movement. We should know. We have the knowledge available, so we should actually make use of it and not appear ignorant or foolish when challenged. Any questions so far? Yes? Where are you?
In text 32.
Text 32 of which chapter?
This chapter.
Huh?
This chapter.
Chapter 1?
Transmigration. Sorry. 31. Last sentence.
Yeah?
During transmigration from one body to the next, the soul is taken away by the orotaries of Yamaraj and put into a particular type of hellish life, Naraka, in order to become accustomed to the condition in which he will live in his next body. When I read this sentence, then I was thinking, that means when a simple person is taken to the court of Yamaraj and he is punished in a particular Naraka for his sinful activity, then after that he is going to be given a body. That means after that, what body he is going to get, definitely he is going to get some suffering in that body. So that sort of suffering is kind of equal to that suffering in the Naraka.
Something like that. Prabhupada explains in third canto, Lord Kapiladeva explains, that when the Yamadutas grab someone, they throw him in a special kind of subtle body. And he's dragged to the court of Yamaraj. And the description is there. I've forgotten all the details, but it's a rough journey. It's like, it's just excruciating suffering. And if the guy had a gross body, it would be unbearable. So he gets this subtle body where it's still just about unbearable, but somehow he can endure it. And then he winds up at the court of Yamaraj, and all these punishments may be inflicted upon him. And then after some time, he's given his next lifetime. So it may not be hellish exactly after that. He may first be put into hellish... Well, that's the first thing. He may get put into hellish life. Let's see. 31. Going back there. During transmigration. Yeah, it seems... I would read it that way. During transmigration from one body to the next. In other words, while you're on your way, while you're on the journey, when you're between bodies, the soul's taken away by the Yamadutas and put into a particular type of hellish life to become accustomed. So I'm not quite sure on the geography and the timing here, but it seems to correspond, as far as I can understand, with that journey described by Lord Kapildev. I was dragged down to the hellish place in this subtle body. Something else?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's described that it's just like moments, but it seems like eternity. Time is subjectively relative. Like when you're having fun, time goes boom, boom, boom. And when you're waiting for a bus, you know, you look at your watch and it's 11:20. And then you look around and you know, this and that and the other thing. And you look at your watch again and it's 11:21. So time seems to be excruciatingly long in that circumstance while one is being dragged, but it's actually just a few moments. That's what Lord Kapildev says. Okay. Get back to that little place. Okay, so now the Yamadutas, the Vishnudutas, are going to ask some more questions in text 39.
Who are the actual candidates for punishment? Are all karmis engaged in furtive activities punishable, or only some of them?
Yes. One who has the power to punish others should not punish everyone. That's the particular point here. The Vishnudutas particularly inquired about who is punishable and why Yamaraj has been designated to discriminate between who is punishable and who is not. How is one to be judged? What is the basic principle of authority? These are the questions raised. So if someone has the power to punish, he has a great responsibility, because if you punish the wrong person, then you're doing a great injustice. And then you may become responsible for getting it done to you. One should not punish everyone. Just because you have the power to punish doesn't mean you indiscriminately go around punishing everyone. One has to know who should be punished, and those who should be punished severely. And those who are innocent should never be punished. That's the responsibility, not just that they give you a gun or they give you a stick and then you go around punishing everyone in sight. You have to know who deserves to be punished and who should not be. So the Vishnudutas are challenging. All right, you say you're working for Yamaraj. Okay, you tell us who deserves to be punished and who doesn't. What's the law here? Yeah, you stand for the law, you tell us what the law is. Let's hear it. That's the challenge. then the Yamadutas are going to come back.
That which is prescribed in the Vedas constitutes Dharma, religious principles, and the opposite of that is irreligion. The Vedas are directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, and are self-born. This we have heard from Yamaraj.
So they're giving a very good answer. Dharma, Hyadharma, Tatviparya, Veda Pranihito Dharma. That the Dharma is understood from the Vedas. The Vedas are directly the personality of Godhead himself. And by hearing from the Vedas, one can know. From Shastra, and especially they say here, from the Vedas. This is what we've heard from Yamaraj, our authority, that one has to know from the Vedas. So that's the standard. Then they're going to get quite philosophical here. That's the basic principle. It's all in the Vedas. Now they're getting into quite a lot of detail. They're talking about Narayan, the controller of everything, the cause of all causes, who controls the entire cosmic manifestation through the three qualities, Sattvagun, Rajagun, and Tamagun. And everyone gets a different set of qualities, different names, different duties, and different forms according to these three qualities. Then the next question may come, well, if there's some crime committed, there have to be witnesses before the suspect can be convicted. And Prabhupada tells of his own experience in being challenged about that. Somebody know that story? Prabhupada just indirectly talks about it here. He doesn't put it in story form, but maybe you've heard about it. Have you heard about this before?
Is this the French cardinal?
No. This is from Scottish Church's college. In Prabhupada's student days, of course, Scottish Church's College was started by Scottish missionaries, and of course they were going to educate the young Bengali boys in all the various arts and sciences and literature and so on, and also in spiritual consciousness, because of course the natives were quite primitive in their spiritual ideas. They were worshipping all these grotesque idols. They were all idolaters and pantheists, and they weren't Christians. I mean, above all, they had not understood that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. They had all these strange ideas about transmigration and karma and all sorts of things that our Lord has not explained in his holy book. So the one professor, I don't know if this was Rukwaj or a different one, he challenged in the class that you say that there's the living being suffers for his karma, but who is there to say what this person has done? Where's the witness? Prabhupada says, a learned Christian professor who argued that although people are generally punished after the witnesses of their misdeeds are examined, where are the witnesses responsible for one suffering the reactions of karma? That was the challenge given by this Prabhupada said we once had a discussion with a Christian professor, that means in his college days. And Prabhupada at that time said he wasn't really equipped to answer. But later certainly he was. And here are the answers. Let's hear the answers.
Sun, fire, sky, air, demigods, moon, evening, day, night, directions, water, land, and Supersoul, himself, all witness the activities of the living entity.
There's a lot of witnesses. It's hard to get away with anything around here. The day is the witness. The night is the witness. The moon, the demigods, the sky, the air, the sun, the super soul. There's no shortage of witnesses to what people are doing. Now, who are the candidates for being punished? Maybe the Yamadutas can tell us.
The candidates for punishment are those who are confirmed by these many witnesses to have deviated from their prescribed regulative duties. Everyone engaged in fruitive activities is suitable to be subjected to punishment according to his sinful acts.
Okay. If you're engaged in fruitive activities and you're deviating, you can be punished. That's the trouble with fruitive activities. You know, your people think in terms of like getting good karma in a general sort of sense, doing good and being a good person, so that you'll have good karma. Even someone gave me a business book a couple of months back, and it was by a guy who used to be with Apple Computer, who's a big guy with them, and was talking about various things when you're starting up a technology company. But one thing that he had was that you have to you sort of have to watch your karma. You shouldn't do things that are bad karma. He had that idea. And certain other things you should do because they're good karma. So he had the general idea that there's some sort of laws in the universe, and if you generate good karma, things will go well for you. And if you generate bad karma, you're going to get it someplace down the line. So keep your karma on the good side. Don't do gross, nasty things. Put some pennies in your good karma piggy bank, and gradually good things will happen. But the problem is that people deviate, and then they become punishable. It's hard to always be, just like kids, it's hard to be good. Right? They're supposed to be good, and they try to be good. Are you going to be good? I'll try. But it's very hard to be good, because there's so many temptations toward for not being good, for being bad. Yes?
But the good won't outweigh the bad. That's the idea of the good.
Well, you hope so. But, and it may. Your good may outweigh the bad, but it may not. You try to be good. Like a Jamil, he was trying to be good, and then he got hit by he got sideswiped, and all of a sudden he was very, very bad. People try to be good, and then something happens, you know. They meet this beautiful girl who winks at them, but she happens to be somebody's wife, and something happens, and the next thing happens. And they, you know, they were being good, and all of a sudden they're not very good anymore. They're just out of ignorance. They're trying to be real good and generate good karma, and they have lunch at McDonald's, and they have no idea what kind of karma they're eating for themselves. So people really don't know. You know, they don't know the rules. That's a big part of the problem. That we're trying to get good karma and stay away from bad karma, but we don't know what they are. We're ignorant. We don't know what's good and what's bad. Or something happens. Who is that king? Nurga. King Nurga. Nurga, what did he do? He was so generous in charity that his charity was like the stars in the sky or the number of particles of sand on the beach. He was so generous. He was so pious. But one time he gave a cow to a Brahmin, and the cow wandered off from the herd and went into some other Brahmin's herd. And then the first Brahmin was looking for his cow, and he saw it was with the cows from the second Brahmin. Hey, you swiped my cow. No, it's my cow. No, it's my cow. No, it's my cow. No, it's my cow. And there was this big thing, and then they somehow went to the king, and you know, they figured it out that the king has given this cow. No. The cow wandered back into the king's herd, I think, and the king gave it again to the second Brahmin. That's what happened. And then they went to the king. They, you know, you gave my cow to the other guy. No, that was my cow. That was my guy. You, what kind of king are you? You're giving the same cow to the two different people. Well, okay, I'll give you 20 cows. No, I want my cow. And I'll give you 2,000 cows. I want my cow. So then the Brahmins cursed him. And he became a lizard. Actually, Yamaraj said, what do you want first, your bad karma or your good karma? Your good karma is like unbelievable. You've got all this good karma. But your bad karma is also there. So the king figured, well, I guess let's get rid of the bad karma first, then I'll take the good karma, which Prabhupada said was the wrong move. I probably would have made the same thing. I said, oh, let's get rid of the bad karma. Then you have all the good karma ahead of you, you know. But Prabhupada said it was stupid. So take your good karma first and then see if you can get out of your bad karma. But anyway, he became a lizard because he gave, it was like usurping a Brahmin's property. He'd given this a Brahmin's property away to somebody else. So, you know, even when you're trying to be really good and you are really good, something like that happens. I mean, how do you guard against that? Some cow wanders back into your, you know, how do you know? But it happened and he got cursed. Of course, Krishna saved him. That's the rest of the story. Krishna's sons found the lizard in the well. They couldn't reach him. They reported to their father, there's a lizard down in the well. Very wonderful lizard. So Krishna came, let's see. And he put his hand way down in the well, and as soon as he touched the lizard became a king again, and then he told his story. And everyone learned something about respecting a Brahmin's property. So, this is the problem with fruitive activities, that everyone can be... if you're doing fruitive activities, means basically you're working for yourself. So you're responsible. You get the good and you get the bad. You're responsible for any deviation that you perform. If you're off course, you have to pay for it. So that's what they say here. When the witnesses confirm that you're performing fruitive activities but you're deviated, then you can be punished. Then they say, okay, you people are sinless, but in the material world, whether one is pious or impious, he's sinful. They're all karmis. Some of them are pious, some of them are impious, but they're all karmis, and they can act either way because of being impelled to do so by the modes of material nature. And here they even say, if you're under the modes of material nature, sinful activity is inevitable. You can't help it, practically. Anyone who's under the modes of nature, sooner or later he's going to perform sinful activities, especially if he's in the mode of ignorance, but in the mode of passion also, and even in the mode of goodness. Sooner or later there'll be some sinful activities. So Prabhupada says, therefore all of them commit sinful actions and everyone's punishable. That's more or less the conclusion. Any questions so far?
We understand the process of Krishna consciousness is supposed to alleviate us from karmic reaction, pious or impious. But it still seems like some devotees, some of us, still get some kind of reactions, pious and impious.
So what about that?
I mean, Krishna consciousness doesn't work. Or is it that...
Maybe that's the answer. Krishna consciousness doesn't work. What do you think?
Maybe a token of reaction for what it should really be. A minute portion of the reaction.
Any other contributions on this?
Maybe this
Yeah, Krishna may be doing you a favor. What's the old movie cliche? You know, they come, wow. Thanks, I needed that. So, yeah. Sometimes we need it, so Krishna smacks us, and it's good for us. Anything else?
Mm-hmm. It was Madhavananda Prabhu giving a class 4 years ago, and he was very emphatic. He said, when one takes diksha, all the karma is taken by the spiritual master. And Krishna, you know, he used to say, Sarvadharma Parichaya, everything is, all your sins collected, everything is taken. So what is it that we get?
Or the other thing is, the slate gets clean, and then what happens? Yeah, you dirty it up again. Spiritual master says no intoxication, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling. And we say, okay, but then, you know, this is not exactly illicit. It's kind of like understandable. Or this is, you know, it's not really gambling, it's just kind of like investment. Or this is really not this, it's that. And we do these things. We commit sinful activities. Worst, we commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting. So then, yeah, we got freed from all sinful reactions, but now we've gathered some new ones. Well, that can be a problem. Anything else? Yeah.
You mentioned that even in the mode of goodness.
Yeah. Mode of goodness is purer than the others, but who's in pure goodness? In the material world, goodness is always a little bit tinged with passion, with ignorance. We're not perfectly pure. Vishuddha sattva. That's the transcendental platform. Otherwise, mundane goodness, there's always something. Always something. Or even in the mode of goodness, just like, so, mode of goodness, he's a Brahmin. But then he winds up being the Kula Guru for Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. Kripacharya. He was a Brahmin, so that means the mode of goodness, but somehow he wound up being Brahmin for the wrong guys. So then you get affected or entangled or associated with sinful activities. At the Vastraharan of Draupadi, he didn't say anything because he was working for the Kurus. So even though he was a Brahmin, he was in the mode of goodness, still. By bad association or force of circumstance, sometimes just by force of circumstance, these things go on. Padam padam yad vipadam, danger at every step in the material world. Yes.
Support me. So, how can you see that?
Well, you have to someone's Krishna conscious for many years and they see someone making a mistake and they support him? How can you explain that? You could explain it in different ways. One way is that he's made a big mistake. He's supporting someone who's acting wrongly. Another way to look at it is that he's got clearer vision. He sees that this person made some mistake inadvertently. Why should he be persecuted? He's actually trying to serve Krishna. Or other explanations could be given. First of all, we have to see if he's the wrong person. Just like here, the Vishnu Dutas, who are they going to support? Huh? They're going to support Yamaraj, the Yamadutas team? No. Look at the person we're going to hear about his history, the person that they're going to wind up supporting. Now, are they going to get in trouble, the Vishnu Dutas? No. So they're saying from the beginning, you have to know, you know, okay, you tell us, who is punishable? You have to know. Sometimes we see that someone's, you know, all on a campaign for justice and punishment, and the evildoers should be punishment. What kind of society do we have where people can do terrible things and get away with it? Okay, that's one side of the story. But are you clear? Do you have a clear understanding of the philosophy? When you're calling for someone to be punished, are you sure that this person is punishable? Do you know the principles of religion? Or is it just your sentiment or your sense of what's right? The Yamadutas, when they were asked, how do we know what are religious principles? They didn't say, well, we have the good sense to know what's right. They didn't say, we have a sense of justice. No. Veda pranihita dharma. We have to judge by the Vedas. Tasmat shastra pramanam te. Karya karya vyavastita. Gatva shastra vidhanoktam karma kartam iharasi. One has to know what's to be done and what's not to be done from the shastra, not from what feels right. What feels right may be wrong. What feels wrong may be right. Lying felt wrong for Maharaj Yudhisthira, but it was right because Krishna asked him to. Fighting felt wrong for Arjuna, but it was right because Krishna wanted him to. So it's not just our feelings, our sense of what's right and wrong. Ultimately, what does Krishna say? What does the Shastra say? That's how we know. Yashastra vidamutsrija vartate kamakarata. Nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukkamakarambhita. If we don't go by the Shastras, the result will not be good. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. Yes?
And sometimes there can be situations, and it happened during Prabhupada's time also, in New York, when, you know, to speak is also right and not to speak is also.
Yeah, sometimes the thing can be judged from different angles of vision. Dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam mahajana yena katasapanta. The intricacies of dharma can be quite difficult, and therefore one has to follow in the footsteps of the Mahajan. That again means you have to know actually what the Mahajans are doing and have some idea why they're doing it. Otherwise you wind up like the veterinarian and the horse. You know that story? Some horse had a big swelling in his neck. So the veterinarian was called in, and he just took a big hammer and smashed the horse in the neck. And then the horse was fine. So one of the other guys there saw this, and he was impressed. Oh, this is how you do it. So then when some other horse got sick in the neighborhood, he said, don't worry, I know what to do. And he took out the hammer and smashed the horse, and the horse died. And then he's going around the neighborhood basically killing off horses. And saying, well, you know, this is what I learned from the veterinarian. Finally it came to the veterinarian's attention, this guy is doing this. And he's saying, you know, this is what he learned from me. So he said, you fool. You don't understand. That horse had swallowed a watermelon. So when I hit it on the neck, the watermelon was smashed and the horse recovered. But that's not what you do for everything. So sometimes we imitate the acharyas or we imitate the mahajans, and one, that doesn't work either. There are two things, anukara and anusara. Anukara means externally imitating, and anusara means actually understanding and following. So we have to follow. Okay. Now the Yamadutas are going to say at the top of page 63, text 45.
In proportion to the extent of one's religious or irreligious action in this life, one must enjoy or suffer the corresponding reactions of his karma in the next.
That's pretty clear. According to your pious and impious activities, you enjoy or suffer. Then it gets, again, a little complex. They say that we see that there are different varieties of life which are due to contamination by the three modes of nature. So some living entities are peaceful, some are restless, some are foolish. What does that correspond to? Goodness, passion, and ignorance. Those in goodness are peaceful, in passion they're restless, and in ignorance are foolish. Or happy, or unhappy, or in between. Or religious, irreligious, and semi-religious. We can deduce that in the next life these three kinds of material nature will similarly act. You've got, Prabhupada used to say, we are infecting some mode of nature, means being infected by some particular mode of nature, and then things go that way. Just like getting infected with a virus or getting infected with something else. So then we can see what's going on. We know that tomorrow he's going to be a mess. You know, we saw that he was, he ate like three times more than any reasonable person could eat. And then later he was saying, I think I have a little bit of a headache. And you can understand where he's going to be tomorrow morning. You're not going to see him at Mangalarti. Maybe by the middle of the day he'll be telling you how sick he is and he doesn't know what happened and so on. So you can understand from where a person is now where he's going to be. According to the modes of nature. They have that in police work, profiling. It means you can see the guy from a mile away. You can see what kind of person he is. There's some gentleman walking with a business suit and he's well dressed and he's dignified. You're not going to worry about him. Here's some young guy, you know, decked out in chains and, cutting the profile like, okay, who's going to mess with me? And, the police, right away, their radar is on this guy because it's just a question of time before he starts to get into something. And then there are kind of those in between. He's not like, don't worry about him. And he's not like, whoa, where'd this guy come from? He's someplace in the middle. So they can see kind of right away. People who are experienced in border immigration and customs, border control, you know, they see, after they've seen 5,000 people, they kind of know right away, whoa, look at this guy. Okay, you know, put this guy in the washing machine, and not much of the dryer, you know, and the old drying things. What do they call those? Ringer. Put him in the ringer, and watch the coins fall out of his pockets. You know, there's something with this guy. They can see right away, because they're expert in understanding, experienced. So it's also mentioned in Fourth Canto that the modes of nature are like flags on a chariot. In the old days, the chariot would be there and the flag would be there, and you'd know, oh, there's Karna, oh, there's Arjuna, there's Dronacharya, there's Duryodhana. According to the flag, Arjuna had, what's on Arjuna's flag? Hanuman's on Arjuna's flag. So that you could, Kapidraja. So they knew, there's Arjuna, because you could see the flag. So the modes of nature are like flags on a chariot. You can see right away if you have the vision. Whoa, there's Mr. Tamagun, you know, walking towards us. Or there's a saintly person. Or there's a, you know, greedy, oh my goodness, greedy, greedy guy. I once bought an airline ticket from a guy who was so greedy. I won't tell you the whole story, but he was so greedy. When he finally got the money in his hands, it was like, he was kissing it practically, you know. It was like massaging it, kissing it, getting energy and love and everything that you might want out of life from counting these rupee notes. You could just see the greed illuminating his entire existence. A mode of passion, like anything. So, these are like flags on a chariot, these three modes. And the Yamadutas say that, well, you can tell what his next life is going to be by seeing where he is now and seeing what modes of nature he's picked up. Any questions so far? Okay. Just thinking if I'm going to take a break here. It's not a bad breaking point. Or whether I'm going to go a little further. Let's see where we are. We'll just do this one more verse. It's interesting. Vartaman anyayo kalo. As springtime now indicates the nature of springtimes in the past and future, this life of happiness, distress, or mixed gives evidence of the religious and irreligious activities of the person's past and future lives. You can, seeing where a person is now, you can understand something about where he was, where he's coming from, and where he's going. Huh? It's common sense almost. You see where a person's come from. Just what were some of the symptoms of mature sinful activities we were discussing the other day? Disease. Legal implication. Poverty, ugliness. So when you see those things, you could say, whoa, where's this person coming from? You know, how many Brahmins did he kill? Or whatever. You look and say, well, this person did something really sinful. Or must have racked up a lot of sinful activities and now he's paying. You know, because he's so diseased and ugly and foolish and everything else. Or the other way around, pious. Look at this person, he must have performed a lot of pious activities. And then you can understand the future. You don't have to be a mystic. You can look and see. Just as somebody can understand, look at this guy, you know, give him 10 years, he's going to be in jail. doesn't take a mind reader. You just look at a person and say, well, it's only a question of time before the guy's like dead on the street or in jail. So in the same way, or this person, you know, he's going to go somewhere. Like he's destined to be a general, or he's destined to be a great scholar. You don't have to be a star reader for that. You look and see the qualities of the person and say, you can see this person's going to have a bright future in academia, or this person will be a real leader of men, or this person will be a criminal. You can see. So past and future lives, one can see that way. Now, you may not get it exactly right. You're not going to know within two or three species of precision exactly what kind of body this person is going to get, but you get the basic, you can get the drift of it. You can tell something about where this person's going and where he's come from by seeing where he is now. Purvam gacchanti satvasta madhye tishtanti rajasa viganya gunavitista dho gacchanti tamasa. Okay. Shall we take our break? Yes, yes, yes.
I was thinking because you say like if you have like qualities thinking or these qualities are coming from umpire's activities, simple acts. Mm-hmm. But mostly like when we are preaching or doing mystical books, it seems like when you find someone that is completely poor or so many problems, it can easily take the mercy and take the book. While others that they are very beautiful and rich, that it comes from pious acts, they can take the mercy.
Yeah, that's the other side.
On the opposite.
Yeah.
Because they have done sinful activities and they can take the mercy. The ones that have done pious activities, they can't.
Yeah, that's also there. Sometimes we see that also, that person's got all attributes and he's proud as hell. You know, nobody's going to be able to say anything to this guy because he thinks he's God's gift to humanity. He's good looking, he's rich, he's popular, and all of these things. And you know that this person is not going to, he's going to be impervious to any spiritual message, certainly, or any down-to-earth understanding. He's just going to be out there in the land of the demigods, imagining. And somebody else, you can see that, well, the guy's a poor slob, but he's humble. You know, he really kind of understands how, you know, what a rotten state he's in, and sees that he kind of needs help. He's, you know, open. So that's the other side of it. What is it? Blessed are the meek and humble, for they shall inherit the earth. Huh? So that's there. That sort of. So it's like reading. It's like reading an astrological chart. You say, well, you know, you've got an exalted Mercury, but then his side, you know, Rahu is aspecting your sun, and you know, all of this kind of stuff. So it's not such a straightforward thing because it's like reading a book. There's a plot and a subplot and a sub-subplot and. So it is with person's qualities. You can see right away the dominant picture, but then there are other things to be considered. So then that's how you become an expert judge of character. You see all the ins and outs. Is that okay? And then there's things nobody would have imagined. You know, the best judge of character wouldn't have known, wouldn't have guessed. You know, because Krishna's mercy was there, or just because something was hidden. Aparabdha karma, karma that nobody really would have expected. You thought this guy was going to be, you know, a great scholar, and he wound up in jail. Or you thought this person was going to be a criminal, and he turned out to be a great scholar. So sometimes, you know, it's not that everything is manifest to us, even when we're the most. Discerning people. We don't always know.
the perfected souls, they can know everything. Narad Muni can see past, present, future. We don't always get it right. Astrology has that problem. You know, you go to an astrologer and he basically knows the ropes, he knows the stars, but it takes great skill and subtlety to really know everything that's going on. And even then, the best astrologers may get thrown off track, may get bewildered. So certain knowledge in the material world is not easy to come by. Okay? Okay, we are taking our break for, say, till quarter after, thereabouts. Shri Krishna Chaitanya.